Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Vayin Dalet Amud Aleph, 10 lines down. So Ravacha Brei Ravika challenged his uncle from the previous statement, Itmarnami Amar Ravacha Bar Yaakov. So Ravacha Bar Yaakov quoted this in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, which is Mekadesh Altnai Uba'al, Divrei Hakol In Tricha Mimena Get. That if he is Mekadesh Altnai, then does Bia. Everybody agrees you don't need a get because the Bia was done on the premise of the original Kiddushin. Basically, what he is saying is that Rab and Shmuel do not argue in this case. And again, that supported what we saw from Rabba earlier, or the amended Rabba earlier, that Rab and Shmuel only argue when it's Isha Achat Kishtei Nashim, where it's one woman that looks like two women, but with one woman herself. When it's an issue for only one woman, then there's no argument between Rav and Shmuel, and we believe that the Bi'ah is done on the premise of the original Kiddushin, original Tanai, and therefore it's not Chal. So now Rav Acha Brei Ravika challenges that and says, wait a minute, we have from Yevamot, Chalitza Mut'at Kshera. If you do Chalitza by mistake, it's Kshera. Izuhi Chalitza Mut'at. What is a mistaken Chalitza? Amar Reish Lakish, Kol Shomer Lo Chalotzla Ubekachata Konza. Do chalitza with her, and you'll marry her through doing this. So that is considered to be a chalitza mutat. We can mislead the man into thinking that he is actually taking her as a yavam, does all the tekes of a chalitza, and that will end up being chalitza. That's the way Reish Lakish reads it. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, ani shone ben shenitkavein hu, velo nitkavna hi, ben shenitkavna hi, velo nitkavna hu, chalitza psula, achit kavnu shnehem. Says, first of all, you need both of them to have kavanah here. So there's no way what you're describing, Reish Lakish, will go through, because neither of them have kavanah, or at least one party here does not have kavanah for chalitza, and that won't work. They have to know they're doing chalitza. So Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish fundamentally, and says that chalitza requires kavanah, and without that kavanah, you cannot accomplish chalitza. So Reish Lakish, your description of a mistaken chalitza, which says that he thinks he's doing yibum, that clearly will not work. So Ba'at Amar, it's chalitza kshera, and you, Reish Lakish, are telling me that that type of chalitza is kshera? Elam Rabbi Yochanan, what's a chalitza mit'at? That is, kol she'omer lo chalotz la amanat shititein lecha matayim zuz. Say to the man, go ahead, do this chalitza, and she'll give you 200 zuz to make sure that you are happy about it. So here, what they did was, they told him that it is chalitza, so he's mitkaven lechalitza, she's mitkavna lechalitza, so we don't have a problem there. But they embedded a condition in the chalitza, which said that, do the chalitza, and she will pay you 200 zuz. If the tnai holds, then the chalitza will not go through, because she did not accomplish the tnai. If she doesn't accomplish the tnai, the chalitza will fail. What Rabbi Yochanan says is, that's called a chalitza mutat, and it goes through. The tnai is batel. Alma, kevin davad ma'aseh, since he did an action, achule achle litnai. He forgave the tnai. Or the ma'aseh, by doing it, wipes out the existing tnai, or ignores existing tnai.
Why would that?
Because we're saying that it's ksheira. The only way that this chalitza can be ksheira is if the tnai is batel, if the tnai is nullified. If the tnai is still extant, then the chalitza was not effective because there was an embedded condition in the chalitza. So if I don't accomplish the condition, then the chalitza won't go through. Obviously, if she pays the 200 zuz, then it would have gone through. But over here we're saying, and that's what the Gemara in Yevamot says, is that even if she doesn't pay the 200 zuz, the chalitza is a ksheira, because that's what chalitza mutad is. She can hook him in by saying that I'm going to pay him, and in the end not pay him, and the chalitza is still good. Well, if she does that, what does that imply? It implies that whatever action you're taking now wipes out, or is mevatel, the tnai legamre. So back before, when Abaye said, and we had Rabbi Yochanan here corroborate basically what Abaye was saying through a rabba, that when Rav and Shmuel argue, Rav's reasoning is not because he believes Achule achle the tnai. It's not because he forgave the tnai, but rather, in adam usse bilato bilatznut. Person doesn't make his bia into a biatznut. So now here you see clearly that the reasoning behind this is that he is achle the tnai. And therefore when he performs the nisuim and the bia by the nisuim, he basically forgives or lets go of all the Tnaim. He retroactively eliminates the Tnaim. So then the Gemara says, Achanami. So say the same thing here. Came in the Baal Achuli Achle the Tnai. So it's over here. Since the husband forgave the Tnai, then the Kedushin should be effective over here. And that's Tosafot asks a question, which is a pretty obvious question. Who says that the two are connected over here? Just because it works over here by Chalitza, who says that that's the same reasoning behind what happens by the case of marriage and Kiddushin? They could be totally independent, and they could have different reasons associated with them. Just because you say over here that the Chalitza goes through and the Tanai is Batel, first of all, it doesn't tell you why. That's number one. Even if you assume why, that doesn't tell you why it works also by Kiddushin. How come the Gemara is so willing to extrapolate? So Tosafot, the first Tosafot says, Temel read, the Maika Sakadatcha, the High Maksha. What is he even asking here? V'chi Sakadatcha, lo yul shum t'nai, the batel shum mecher v'kinyan. You can never make conditions in transactions? This is giving us a paradigm which says that all conditions in any kinyan fail. Is that what it's telling us? That's clearly not what is being said here. So how do you know to apply it to the case of Kiddushin? V'esh lamar, the Sakadatcha, should tzarich lezkir t'nai, Pshat Gemar Kinyano Mecher. What the questioner is thinking over here is that the fact that he did not re-emphasize the condition at the time of the action, that's why the condition fell away. So now, if we apply that by Kiddushin, at the time of Nisuim, at the time of Biyah, the fact that he does not reiterate the Tanai means that the Tanai doesn't exist anymore. And that's the way that he's trying to extrapolate from the case of Chalitza over to the case of Kiddushin. So Amalei Bar Bei Rav. So one of the individuals of the yeshiva, whether that means just the yeshiva in general or Bar Bei Rav from the yeshiva of Rav, Shapir Kamart, are you really giving a good explanation for why the Tnai by Chalitza doesn't work? Michde, let us take a look at this. Kol Tnai Mehecha Gamrinan. How do we know that you're even allowed to use conditions when it comes to transactions or kinyanim? From where do we have that in the Torah that a Tanai works at all? Mitznai b'nei Gad u'b'nei Ruvain. That is the agreement or the paradigmatic condition that is set based on the agreement between Moshe and b'nei Gad and b'nei Ruvain. B'nei Gad and b'nei Ruvain, Moshe says to them, if you cross over the Yarden and your chalutzim lifnei ha'am, then you have the right to keep the property that I gave you in Eiver ha'Yarden. If you don't do that, then, they will join the rest of Bnei Yisrael inside of Eretz Yisrael and have to divide up inside of Eretz Yisrael. So he gives a condition as to whether or where they will inherit the land. So now, there are a number of things that are apparent about the Tanai Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvain. We'll enumerate them. The Gemara will highlight one here, and then we'll talk about the others. Tanah de efshar de kuyumei ade shaliach ki hotam havatnei. Any Tanai that can be accomplished through a shliach, through a messenger, like by B'nai Gad or B'nai Ruvain, then you can have a Tanai. Tana'ah, delo efshar lekumei adei shliach kihotam. If you have a condition that cannot be fulfilled through a shliach, lo havi tana'ah, then it's not a case where the Tanai will hold water or have any effectiveness. So now, what the Gemara is suggesting over here, based on the question that he's asking, he's saying the reason that the Tanai fails by Chalitza is not because the Maaseh somehow was strong enough or overrode the Tanai and the Tanai was forgiven, but rather because no Tanai will ever work by Chalitza. It fails because of one of the basic conditions of a Tanai. A Tanai has to be able to be accomplished through a proxy, through a shaliach. By Chalitza, nobody can be your proxy. Nobody can accomplish Chalitza through Shlichut. So therefore, since nobody can accomplish Chalitza through Shlichut, therefore you cannot have a Tanai by Chalitza. And that's why the Tanai doesn't work. The Tanai doesn't work because, something about the Masse, the Tanai doesn't work because you can't do any Tanai by Chalitza. That's not true by Kiddushin. By Kiddushin, since you can do Kiddushin Ayidei Shaliach, therefore, you can also have a Tanai with regards to the Kiddushin. Right, so the Gemara's next question is the question that you just posed, which is, wait a minute, that's true by Kiddushei Kesef, that's true by Kiddushei Shtar, by Kiddushei Bia, you cannot do that, Ayidei Shaliach. So then, when we were talking about before, it was Bia, so Bia was the method that he was using in the end, And if that's the case, he can't do it on the shliach, then why should the t'nai be effective there? The t'nai should also fall away there because it's bia. Va bia dolo efshar lekiume yayidei shliach. Bia is something you can't accomplish through a shliach. Kiot, like the case of Negar Uvein, v'kavita v'itana. And over there, you can make additions. Hata mishum d'itkush havayot v'adadi. That's for a different reason over there, because the reasoning there is that all the methodologies of Kiddushin are connected together. The three different methods of Kiddushin, which are Kesef, Shtar, and Bia, are all connected. Now, it's not exactly a hekesh. The pasuk uses havaya, and then the Gemara learns out what those havaya, their methods of havaya are. So that connection between them, and it's two against one, you could have argued that Bia should set the precedent or the paradigm, but you have Shtar and Kesef that do work Ayyadei Shliach. So since they work Ayyadei Shliach, even though Bia does not work Ayyadei Shliach, they're connected or subsumed under these havayot, and therefore all methods of Kiddushin can have T'nai embedded in them. So now let's go back and discuss this. This is a very important principle for a number of reasons. First of all, the Gemara here states that anything that's not conform to the T'nai B'nai Gad B'nai Ruvain is not considered to be a condition. There are a number of factors that are apparent there. One of them is that it can be done Ayyadei Shliach. Rashi already says, what does that mean? It can be done Ayyadei Shliach. Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain. Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to be there when it comes time to decide or allocate the land from the condition that he's setting. Yoshua is going to do it on his behalf. So here you see that the T'nai B'nai Gad Ruvain is allowed to be done through Shliach, because Yoshua is going to be the executor of the actual condition based on the words or the conditions that Moshe set. That's the way Rashi learned Shliach. There are others that focus the Shlichut on Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvain, which is that they themselves don't have to do it. They just have to make sure that it's done. Whether it's their children that will do it, or whether it's the fact that they could hire mercenaries to do it on their behalf, whatever that is that they can do it through Shlichut also. So either one of those show you that Shlichut applies by the T'nai Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvain. That's one thing that we learn from there. There's also another aspect, which comes up in many places, which T'nai Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvain were a T'nai Kaful. They were a double T'nai, which means that it was formulated both in the positive and the negative. It gives you both outcomes. Not one was inferred from the other, but rather stated explicitly. If you do this, this will happen. If you don't do this, this will happen. And it gives you all the details. That's what's called a T'nai Kaful. Another thing that is apparent there, or the way that it works there, is that the T'nai came before the Maaseh. That the T'nai was stated before the Maaseh and not the other way around. That the T'nai was coming to unwind a maaseh that was stated, but rather T'nai, the premise was first, and then the outcome was second. These were all character traits of T'nai B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain. So Tosafot asked the question here, how come we don't automatically apply all of those tests? Over here, our Gemara clearly is not talking about a T'nai Kaful. Nobody made a T'nai Kaful over here. He said, oh, if I pay you the money, then the Chalitza goes through. By the Kiddushin, if you have Nidarim on you, then the Kiddushin is not effective. He doesn't say the other way around, which is, if you don't have Nidarim, the Kiddushin will be effective. He doesn't do a T'nai Kaful. So why are we discussing only some of the character traits of T'nai B'nai Gad and Ruvain and not the other character traits? Tosafot gives now a principle. It says that anytime there's a condition in the paradigm of B'nai Gad and Ruvain, it has to have a svara. It has to have a logic to it. If it is logical, if it makes sense, then we will apply it broadly. If it is something that's nice, but you can't give a svara for it, then it won't necessarily apply broadly. So Tosafot says, the case of Shliach is something that has a lot of logic to it, and I'll explain in a second what the logic is that he states. But Shliach is very logical, therefore we're going to apply it broadly. On the other hand, the case of T'nai Kaful is only the sheet of Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim disagree and say you don't need a T'nai Kaful in order for T'nai to work. Why? Because just like what you just suggested, any T'nai, if you state it in one form, the other form is automatically inferred. So therefore, it's not necessarily logical that you would have to use a T'nai Kaful. It might be nicer, it might be much clearer, but it's not necessity. It's not logical that you would agree with that. And same thing with T'nai Lifnei Maaseh. Maybe over there again, these types of conditions or these types of issues, you would not extrapolate because they're not so logical. Now, why over here is it so logical that a shliach would be a condition that makes sense? So Tosafot over here says something very important. He says that shlichut, the ability to give shlichut, to make agency, is an indication of your control or your ownership. If you can make someone into an agent, That shows how much control you have over either the object or the action. The more control over the action, the more likely that you can create conditions in the action. So if you really are in control of the action, because you can create a proxy, then you also can create conditions in the action. On the other hand, if you can't make a shliach, you can't make a proxy over here, that shows that you lack control over the action. If you lack control over the action, then you also lack the control to create conditions within the action, because you're lacking in full control over the maaseh. So Tosafot says it's very logical to apply that, that shliach should be a definition for when a tnai applies or doesn't apply, because it's not really that shlichut itself means something, but rather shlichut is an indication of control. And control is something that wouldn't make a difference as to whether you can make conditions or not make conditions. So that's the way Tosafot explains what's transpiring over here in terms of the control. There are others that bring a definition. Ritva and the Meiri both speak over here. And the Ritva says, or explains why Shlichut makes a difference over here. So the Ritva says, Ba mia gamrinan mina disvaruhu. Here we learn it. Dekaven de maase alim kulehai. Since the action is so strong, delete al yedei shaliach, so that it cannot be done as shliach, duchol ochayel bei tnai. It will not have a tnai that falls into it. So the Ritva takes a slightly different approach and says, when can you not create a proxy? You can't create a proxy when the action is so strong. The action is so strong that it precludes the ability to use a shliach. That means the emphasis on the action is so high that you can't create shlichut. So in a case where you can create a shlichut out of the maaseh, that means that the maaseh is weaker. The maaseh is weaker because you can create a proxy. You yourself don't have to do it. You can have someone else do it. That it weakens or shows that the maaseh itself, there's not so much emphasis on the particular action, but rather, we'll see in a second, the outcome rather than the action itself. So therefore, since the action itself is not so strong, then you can embed conditions in the action. On the other hand, if the action is so important that the individual himself can do it and he can't do it through a shliach, then you can't create conditions in the maaseh. That's the way that the Ritva formulates it. And the Meiri formulates it just in the opposite form, but the same thing, which he says, Shkol ki yotzeh b'zeh maaseh chalush. If the action is so weak, v'atnai mevatlo, and therefore the tnai can wipe it out. But if you have an action that is strong, that can't be done ayde shliach, then the tnai will not wipe it out. So again, he talks about strength of action. So the way that Tosfot formulates it, it shows you control. And that's what the defining thing of shlichut is. On the other hand, the Meiri and the Ritva here both suggest shlichut is an identification of whether the maaseh is so strong that you can't play with it, or if you can't do shlichut, it means that the maaseh is so strong you can't play with it. On the other hand, if you can use a proxy, it means the maaseh is not so strong, and then you can play with it. Shlichut, tnai, all these things are opened up because the action isn't so strong. And the Pnei Yehoshua and Gittin actually brings this or summarizes this like this. Anytime you take an action that can be done through a proxy, that's not a full maaseh. The maaseh gamur, v'dayin yochol yasota yedei shliach, kagon chalitza u'biyah. Just like chalitza and biyah cannot be done by a shliach, because the maaseh is so important, and certainly any maaseh that deals with you in particular, you can't do through a shliach. You can't have someone put on tefillin for you. You can't have someone wear tzitzit for you. That shows that the action itself is so strong or so powerful. Therefore, you can't put in a condition into it. You can't have words come and undermine a maaseh. That's a principle throughout Shas, that actions speak louder than words. And so over here, if the action is so powerful, then your words will have no bearing on the maaseh. On the other hand, in cases where you can do it through a proxy, ein kan maaseh gamur, then that means that the maaseh is not so strong because you're allowed to use a proxy. And therefore, mishum achi yichol atil bo tnai. Then if the maaseh is weak, then dibor can't have an effect on it. So that's the way that you can see the Ritva, the Meiri, and now the Pnei Yehoshua formulates it, that the reason shlichut is the determining factor over here is because it identifies for you the strength of the maaseh. Shlichut is a weak maaseh. No shlichut means that it's a very powerful maaseh. Now, you have to ask here, there's a basic question which the Gemara, we dealt with back on Kuf Hei, in Yevamot, which is, the Gemara here takes it for granted that Chalitza cannot be done on Yedei Shliach. Why not? The Gemara never gives a reason why Chalitza cannot be done on Yedei Shliach. And it's even more pronounced in the fact that you can do Kiddushin on Yedei Shliach, you can do Gerushin on Yedei Shliach, but you can't do Chalitza on Yedei Shliach. Why not? What is the reason behind that? So there, the Mari or Zarua brings that the reason might be the Hekesh to Yibum. And since Chalitza and Yibum have a Hekesh between them, just like you can't accomplish Yibum al Yedei Shliach, because Yibum is Bia, so too you can't accomplish Chalitza al Yedei Shliach. So he says it's Gzerata Katuv. That's the way that the Mari or Zarua describes it. Back in Givamot, we spoke about the Chudushei Rebbe Chaim and Hilchot Yibum v'Chalitza Perek Daud in the Rambam, that the Rebbe Chaim over there discusses the sheet of the Rambam and explains why Chalitza might be different. And then the Kobetz Shurim, Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman here on our daf, makes a similar statement. Over here, Kobetz explained the difference between Chalitza and other types of things that can be done by Shlichut, Gerushin and Kiddushin. He says, Yerod Kadav Sham Klal, B'dinei Shlichut, B'mitzvot, Gabi Hafrashat Shuma, Shayach Shlichut, Shom Da Mitzvah Hi, Shittetakena Yisa. וכן גם בשחיטת קודשים, שישחט הנשחט, ואין קידושין, שתי אישה מקודשת. וכן בגירושין, וכן בקביעת מזוזה, ועשיית מעקה. In all these instances, the outcome is important. The action itself is not important, but the תוצאה, the result is important. You shecht an animal because you want an animal that is שחוטה. You put up a mezuzah because you want a house with a mezuzah on it. By Kiddushin, you do Kiddushin because you want to be married to this woman. You do Gerushin because you do no longer want to be married to this woman. The outcome is more important than the action itself. Masha'en Kain, which is not true by Tzfilin and Tzitzit, Achilat Matzah, Sukkah, Lulav, over there you can't do it through a Shliach. Why? Because there the action is more important than the Totsah, than the outcome. The action of eating Matzah is what's important. It's not that you ate Matzah. We want you to eat Matzah. We want you to sit in this sukkah. But by sukkah, it actually be, the din will be bifurcated. For someone else to build you a sukkah, that you can do. Because there, the totsa'ah is what's important, which is that you have a sukkah to sit in. The other hand, to actually sit in the sukkah, you can't do that through someone else, through a proxy, because there, the mitzvah is to sit in the sukkah. And therefore, he says, yesh shnei minei mitzvot. Heicha de'ikar mitzvah yetotsa'ah ha-maseh, then b'zeh sha'ech shlichut. Anytime that the outcome is more important than the maaseh, then in those instances you can create shlichut, and obviously you can create tnaim. On the other hand, in the case where the maaseh itself, heicha da'asiya ba'atzmah hi gufa mitzvah, lo ma'ani, then you can't use a proxy and tnaim won't have any effect. And he says, ulufikach bi'averia yesh lechalek kein. I'll come back to that in a second, but if he wrote, the same thing will be true. But over here, what you see from the Rabbi Chaim and the Kobetz Shurim, they're both defining in the same way, which is that the Chalitza is different. Chalitza is different because there the ma'aseh, the action itself, is important. And the Reb Chaim takes it even one step further, which is why you don't need Edei Kiyum. By Kiddushin and by Gerushin, you need Edei Kiyum. Edim, they're not testifying about whether there was Kiddushin or whether there was Gerushin. The Edim are coming to testify that the woman is Grusha or Mekudeshet. They're Mekayim. The ma'aseh itself, the Kinyan itself, isn't important. You have Edei Kiyum in order to do that. By Chalitza, you don't need Edei Kiyum. The Maaseh itself generates the Chalitza. And the focus is on the action itself. The Tekes, the ceremony of Chalitza, and Memela, she becomes the Chalitza. And since the emphasis is on the activity and the action, therefore when you need Edim because we want to know whether the action took place, not whether there was a Kiyum of Chalitza. Same that the Kobet Shirim says here, there the Maaseh is more important than the Totsa'ah. And that's the difference between Chalitza and Gerushin and Kiddushin. Now, the Kobet Shirim notes over here, this is also true by Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. That's what we generally, the principle that we have is that ain't Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. Or, Shliach can't do certain mitzvot b'gufo. This might be the determining factor, again, whether it's through Tosafot here, who says that Shlichut indicates that you have enough control over here. You have so much control that you're able to designate a proxy. The same thing might be true in terms of mitzvot. Certain mitzvot like Bikurim. By Bikurim, the Rashbam in Baba Batra and Rashi argue about whether the Shliach, if you send the Shliach with the Bikurim, can he say Mikra Bikurim for you? So once you've made him a proxy, is Shliach Adam Kimoto, is it exactly like him or not like him? So Rashi says, yes, he's like him, and therefore he can say Mikra Bikurim. The Rashbam says, no, listen, Shluchlo shel adam kimoto has limits to it. It's up to a point. He's your proxy, but he doesn't become you. And there, the Ketzot HaChoshen says that by certain mitzvot. Why can't you have someone do the mitzvah of tefillin for you? If shlicho shel adam kemoto, why can't it be that he does it the mitzvah of tefillin for you? So the Ketzot HaChoshen, in the formulation of this issue of mitzvot, shlicho shel adam kemoto, but he can't be gufo. He can't be your physical goof. He can be your proxy, he can act on your behalf, but he can't be gufo. He can't be your physical goof. So that's what he says about tefillin. Shashliach meniach tefillin anachazui shiasiach hashuv kilu amishaleach hasan achazu. You're right. It's as if you put on tefillin. Avalkati lo neach tefillin al rosho abala al rosh hashlucho. In the end, it's not beninecha. It's not al yadecha. You don't solve that problem. In the end, yes, you did hanacha. Somebody did put on the totafot. But in the end, it wasn't on your goof. So you didn't accomplish the mitzvah that needs to be on your goof, because that the shliach can't act as your proxy. Can't do it. Umeshum achi, he says, Bitzitziru tefillin sukkah, and he davele asiyat ha-shliach, asiyat ha-mishaleach, came into guf shlucho, lo vike gufo, lo asa maseh begufo, guf shlucho. But by Pesach, kiddushin gerushin, shkitat Pesach, maseh kiddushin gerushin, avele kilu asa hu, then when the proxy does it, as if you did it, hari nigmara maseh, then all you need to do is the action, and the action is done. You created the status within the woman, and that's done. And so therefore, you're okay with that. And the same might be true by the guards to shliach b'dvar aveira. When can you make a shliach to the varavar and when you can't? If you have enough control over the action that's there, that then you can pass it on to the shliach, then that would work. Well, what is control? Can you control? And there, that comes up to the question of who do you listen to, Hashem or to this individual? The demonstration of control here might be so important. The reason there's no shliach with varavera is because you don't have substantive control to compel the individual to do the avera or to do this action. And since you don't have enough control, you can't create a proxy to do the Aveira on your behalf. Because you can't even do the Aveira. Maybe you can't even exercise the Aveira. There might be an exception to that rule. That is the Tosafot in Kiddushin talks about the Gemara. There talks about a case where a Kohen makes the Yisrael a Shliach, Timi Mikadesh a Grusha. So over there, the Yisrael for himself could do that mitzvah. But for the Kohen, he can't do the mitzvah. Does the Shlichut go through or not? So there's two reasons given by the Gemara as to why there is ein shliach l'dvar aveira. And it says over there that the nafkamina might be between those two reasons as to whether when the Yisrael does it, can he accomplish kiddushin for the Kohen? Because if the focus is on the mishaleach, then it won't go through. If the focus is on the shliach, then it will go through in that case. So there, that's again, the question of substantive control. Can you compel or can you ask someone to do something? There, if you have enough control, you can create a proxy. If you don't have enough control, you can't create a proxy. Over there, where the Yisrael doing it is not an Aveira, maybe you do have enough control where his action will then be attributed to you, and the Kedushin will go through with a Grusha. Right, so here, that all the Rishonim are emphasizing here by Chalitza, that the action itself, the Torah never talks about the outcome, or the woman being a Mikudeshet, or the woman being a Grusha. It simply talks about the ceremony of Chalitza. The emphasis on the Torah is on the ceremony and the actions of Chalitza. The result of that is the woman is freed. But the Torah never emphasizes the aspect of this is the methodology for freeing the woman. It says this is Chalitza. And these are the actions of Chalitza. And because of that, either we'll say here the Maseh is so strong that you can't create a proxy. Maseh is so strong you can't create a Tanai. Or according to the Kovet Shurim and Reb Chaim, the Maseh is everything. Totza'ah is not the emphasis here, it's the maseh itself that is focused. Or, again, like the Ketzot HaChoshen says, it has to be done on the goof of the man and the woman. It involves there the spitting and in front of his face, all those things. A proxy cannot replicate, and therefore it will not go through. For all of those reasons, ain't shliach by chalitza, and as well there is no tnai by chalitza. It has a lot of implications in terms of many different aspects in Shas, just from this little piece about the ability to use shlichut as a determination of when tanai applies and why there's no shlichut by chalitza. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Ula ba'aba, Amar Ula Amar Rabbi Elazar, Hamikadesh b'milve ubal. He uses a loan in order to do the kiddushin. Al tanai, he does kiddushim al tanai. We'll assume that tanai here is that she has no nidarim, ubal, and then he has bia afterwards. Pachot mishave pruta, kiddushin with less than a shave pruta, again, the kiddushin doesn't work, ubal. Divrei akol tzricha imenu get. Everybody agrees you need a get. So from here it implies that the bia afterwards functioned as the kiddushin. Clearly here the first kiddushin failed. Because all these instances, these are failed kiddushin. So failed kiddushin and bia afterwards, everybody agrees you need a get. Now, Dibri HaKol here, Tosafot already raises, is very difficult. Because yesterday, we had the machloket Tanaim, as to whether when a pachod mishave pruta, as to whether the bia afterwards accomplishes kiddushin or not. So how can you say Dibri HaKol? So Tosafot already says that Dibri HaKol doesn't mean everybody, but what most likely the explanation over here is, Dibri HaKol means Rav and Shmuel. Both Rav and Shmuel will agree in this case that it works, and that's what the statement of Amar Ravula, Bar Abba, Amar Ula, Ula's statement here is that everybody agrees, meaning Rav and Shmuel agree in this case, that the Bia is enough to create the Kiddushin, because it's so obvious that the Kiddushin failed. And since the Kiddushin failed, certainly the Bia he does afterwards, he didn't have in mind the original Kiddushin. So that's how you have Dibri HaKol. You can look through the Rishonim. Many of them changed the Girsa here because of the difficulty of Dibri HaKol, and therefore there are multiple Girsaot over here. Amar Rav Yosef Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Menachem, Amar Rabbi Ami, HaMikadesh Pepachot Mishave Pruta, someone who engages in Kiddushin with less than a Shave Pruta, which means that the Kiddushin were not effective, Ubal, and then he has Biat, Tzricha Amenu Get. Then you need a Get. Bahahu Delotoy. And now he explains his position. He disagrees with what Ula said before. Ula applied it both to Milveh, Pachot Mishave Pruta, in Al Tanai, on condition. Whereas over here, we're limiting it according to Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yosef, Bar Abba, Rabbi Nachum, Rabbi Ami, we're limiting it to HaMekadosh V'Pachot Mishave Pruta. Because there, people know. Nobody makes a mistake that less than a Shave Pruta works for Kiddushin, and therefore he knows for sure the Kiddushin failed, and when he does the Bia, he does it with in mind that he's doing the Kiddushin. But in cases of Mekadosh V'Milveh, or the cases of Tnai inside the Kiddushin, people make a mistake that the Kiddushin was really effective, and therefore when they do the Bia, they assume that the Bia is connected to the original Kiddushin, and it fails. So now we have all these different opinions over here as to what is the position of Rav and Shmuel. We had Rabba's opinion that was seemingly substantiated by Rabbi Yochanan as well, that when it comes to Isha Achat, when it comes to the case of Isha Achat, everybody agrees that the Kiddushin are the determining factor. If you have Bia afterwards, they're connected to the Kiddushin. Even according to Rav, Rav and Shmuel agree. Then you have the opinion of Ula, who says just the opposite. Rav and Shmuel all agree that when you have Bia after a failed Kiddushin, that the Bia works as the Kiddushin. And then you have here Rabbi Yosef Bar Abba, who differentiates and says, by the case of Mekadesh Pachot Mishave Pruta, there people know. So therefore the Bia will work as the Kiddushin. In the other cases, by Mekadesh B'Milveh, in the case of Tnai of Nidarim, over there people don't know, and therefore they assume it's connected to the original Kiddushin, and it fails. So you have these different opinions. Now, Mekadesh B'Milveh, it's interesting because it comes up today, actually, a number of times, in different aspects. So Rashi over here says, how is he mean Mekadesh B'Milveh? He loans money, lends money to the woman, and then he says, you know what, with that loan, I want to get married. Since the Gemara says that Milvah L'Hotza'ah Nitna, that a loan, once you give the money is no longer yours. You have a right of collection, but the money's already gone. That means that when you come to the point of Kiddushin, you're not giving the woman anything, because the money was lent beforehand. Since the money was lent beforehand, therefore, at this point in time, you're not giving her anything by saying, let's get married with that loan. And that's why the Mekadesh B'Milveh fails. Now, Tosafot points out that if he forgives the loan, then possibly you could get married through that, not because the forgiveness is the equivalent of a payment, but rather there's hana'ah, the value or the benefit. He can say, I want to get married to you, but hana'at, the forgiveness of the loan. That will work, because that is shavei pruta, that is worth something. The benefit that you are deriving from the forgiveness of the loan, I want to get married to that. That would work. So there are ways to formulate it. The other thing is that you actually have to own the item that you are being Mekadosh with it. If you borrowed money to buy the item which you're being Mekadosh with, you don't own it. And therefore, it's problematic. So that comes up again with rings and at weddings, if you buy it on a credit card. So then, is that considered to be a borrowed item? Or is that considered to be yours? Or, I just saw recently a tshuva with a person who went to a store and he bought this gold band that he's going to give to his wife as a wedding ring. They get the wedding ring. After the wedding, they find out that the guy lied to him. The seller lied to him, and now the ring was not real gold. It was fake. So now, do they have Kiddushin or not? Because, first of all, you have a problem because he thought it was gold, she thought it was gold, and she finds out that it's not gold, it's some cheap metal. So maybe there's a problem there. In addition to that, maybe it was a mekach tod, that the whole transaction was wrong, and he doesn't even actually own it because he's going to give it back or try to get his money back, and maybe he doesn't even own it. So there he discusses the issues and says they probably should have another kiddushin because there might be a serious issue here. That question of milveh comes up in these types of issues of kiddushin today. So very good. If he's extending the loan at that moment and handing her the money at that moment, maybe you could do that. If you mekadesh b'tchilat milveh, then maybe over there it works because the loan itself now he's handing to her at the time that he's doing it. An extension of the loan is what he's using to marry her, and that might be sufficient in terms of creating the kiddushin. It's possible. So it might be possible to differentiate between whether it was done at the time of the loan or done later. That's one thing. Or, as we mentioned before, the difference between whether it's done with the hanat, the forgiveness of the loan, or the loan itself, that also might make a difference as to whether it's successful. Amarav kahana mishmei dula, hamakadesh al tanai, ubal, person who has kiddushin al tanai and then has bi afterwards, tzricha imenu get. They need a get. So here we see that the bia works to override. Zeh ma'maseh. This was an incident. V'lo yakoach v'chamim lo tziyah v'lo get. The chamim were not empowered to let her go without a get. So the reason being that ein adam oseh, Rashi says, bilato bilat znut. And therefore we assume here that when he did the bia, he did it for kiddushin. Now, what it means that lo yakoach v'chamim lo tziyah v'lo get, you could either argue is because they believe the locha is that you need a get, or the possibility is that they really misupak. They really had a safek. They didn't know that when a person at this point does biyah, is the biyah successful to make a kiddushin, or maybe the biyah is a chule machle, that we said before, litnae, or maybe the biyah is premised on the original kiddushin. Since they have a safek, it's a safek isra ish ish, we're going to force her to get a get. So that's what it means here. Lo haya koach b'chachamin l'tziyah b'lo get, because it was a safek. And that safek precipitated that they said, we're not going to let her go without a get, because of the safek. You don't have to say it as a definitive statement that she must get a get. They're just saying that there's no way we're going to allow this to go on without giving her a get, because there's a safek here. Lafuke mehai tano. To exclude the position of this tano. Adama Rabbi Yehuda Mashmo Mishim Rabbi Yishmael. V'hi lo nitpasa. That she was not forced. Asura. If she has an extramarital affair and was not forced into the situation, then she's a surah because she was a consensual extramarital affair. Hanit pasa. But if she was forced, muteret, she can return to her husband because it was not consensual. V'yesh lecha acheret. There is another woman, she'afu pi shelo nitpasa. Even though she wasn't forced, muteret, she's allowed to go. V'ezuzo. What is a case like that? She'kidushah kidushay ta'ot. It's a case where her kidushin were mistaken kiddushin. Shafilu b'na mukava ktefa. Even though she's walking around with her son on her shoulders, mima'enet v'olechaba. She says, I'm out of here, and takes off. Now, there are a number of items that need to be clarified here. First of all, mima'enet, or miyun, can only be used by a ktana. Therefore, the use of the terminology of mima'enet, you can see there's a large tosavot here that discusses, how are you using mima'enet here? So tosavot says, lab dafka, it means mima'enet over here. It's a terminology, or a borrowed term, that means that if she so chooses, she can walk away from the marriage. She can just walk out now because the kiddushin were not effective. It's the same thing as what miyun does. Miyun undermines the original kiddushin as if there's no kiddushin. So too over here, mima'enet v'olecha means that the kiddushin were not effective and therefore she can walk away. What happened here? She had kiddushin al tanai. And then the tanai was not fulfilled. So even though she has a child, and they've been living together all these years, the condition were effective, she can say, I'm out of here, takes her child, walks out and says, we're not married, and I'm leaving. Now, it's clear they had biyah, because otherwise, how did she have a child? So if they had biyah afterwards, what do you see from this? That the biyah afterwards was not effective in creating the kiddushin that failed with the kiddushin al tanai. So that goes against what we just said, or that's in disagreement with what we just brought from Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says that the biyah is effective enough to say that even though there was kiddushin al tanai, that she needs a get. Although, on the other hand, here we have from Rabbi Yishmael, that you can just walk out. The kiddushin are null and void, and you just walk out over here. Actually, there is a question here, meaning that in terms of kiddushin, to make kiddushin effective, you need witnesses. And then they have biyah together later on. If that's going to be the effective kiddushin, what witnesses do you have that there was biyah? The original kiddushin had witnesses, but the witnesses over here, there are no active witnesses of a kiyum kiddushin. So what we say, the Rishonim explained, is there's an umdana. That the fact that people see them living together as husband and wife, and see them being miyached, we can assume that they had biyah, and they will function as edei kiddushin. This actually plays an important role in the machlok between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein, with regards to weddings that are performed by non-Orthodox streams. If they perform the weddings, are the weddings effective? Effective enough that you need a get. But Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that their weddings were ineffective because it wasn't done kedat Moshe of Israel. And since they never had proper kiddushin, they don't need a get. And therefore, the woman who then gets a civil divorce and then goes out and get married, the children are not mamzerim because she was never married to the original individual. Rav Genkin disagreed and said, no, that the first marriage, even though the kiddushin weren't effective as kiddushin, when they live together as husband and wife, and then there are frum people who know that they are husband and wife, see them living together as husband and wife, that is edut for kiddushin through the biyah. And because of that, it is an effective kiddushin. And if she doesn't get a proper get, if she goes to get married afterwards with a civil divorce, the children are mamzerim. It's a big, big machlok between Moshe Feinstein and Rav Henkin has huge nafkamina d'alocha. When they spoke about it, it was probably a big issue, but today it's a massive issue because the rate of divorce is so high that most times when you have a marriage by non-Orthodox entities, then you might face this issue. In general, we follow Rav Moshe Feinstein, we try to find a terim like Rav Moshe Feinstein, that the Biyah later on was maybe premised on the original Kiddushin, and since the original Kiddushin was problematic, so was the Biyah afterwards. But nevertheless, it's important to note, and I hear this from Rabbi Willig all the time, he says that so many people think they're doing a favor. They have non-religious friends or co-workers, relatives, and they say, listen, I'll get you an Orthodox rabbi to do the wedding. He says it's a huge mistake, because once you have an Orthodox wedding, then they're definitely married. And in most likely scenario, if they get divorced, they will not get a proper kosher divorce. They will get a civil divorce. Even if they get a divorce, quote-unquote halachic divorce, it will not be a proper halachic divorce. And then you produce mamzerim afterwards. If it was not done by an Orthodox rabbi, there's a chance that you can be somech on Rav Moshe Feinstein. So you're actually doing a disservice to someone by having them have an Orthodox wedding instead of having a non-Orthodox wedding. He says, don't be so helpful, because it actually causes many more problems down the road. Right, Tana Rabbanan. She goes to the Chacham, and he gives her a petach the neder. They are married. Itzel arufe. She goes to the doctor, v'ripeuta, and he cures the mum. Eina mikudeshet. It's not. Ma ben Chacham the rufe. What's the difference between a Chacham and a rufe? In one case, the tnai works, and in one case, the tnai doesn't work. That's very obvious from what we've spoken about in the past. Chacham, okir et a neder mikaro. The Chacham undermines the neder retroactively. It's as if the neder was never there. Rofe, inu merape, el mikana laba. The Rofe, when he cures the mum, is prospective. That means at the time of the Tnai, was there a neder on this woman? So if she goes to the Chacham and gets a Teret Nedarim, the answer is no. Because retroactively, he eliminated the neder, and it's as if she had no neder at the time of the Tnai, and therefore the Tnai is Mikuyam, and he can get married. The other hand, when you go to the doctor and he cures the mum, at the time of the Tznai, was there a mum? The answer is yes. Is she cured now? Yes, but that doesn't help you, because at the time of the Tznai, there was still a mum. That's the simple way to phrase it, and makes a lot of sense. Tosfot over here introduces two qualifications. One qualification is that as long as the husband doesn't know about it. Once the husband finds out that she had a neder, then the fact that she can go to a chacham doesn't do anything. And that prevents the problem of, why don't we worry about this all along? Say he puts a condition in the in his kiddushin and says, if you have nidarim, no kiddushin. Then he finds out she has nidarim, or she goes off and gets married to someone else. But don't we always have in the back of our mind this problem that she could get a petach of this neder? And that happens retroactively, then the original kiddushin were effective. So what Tosfot says is, once the man finds out about the nidarim, he can't go back and erase them retroactively. Once he knows about the nidarim, the kiddushin failed, and we're done. It's over. The fact that the chacham can be nabamatzi retroactively has no bearing anymore, because the kiddushin already failed. Once they failed, you can't revive them just because you went to get the petach and neder. If the husband never knows about them, and she gets the petach and neder, then as far as the husband is concerned, it never happened. It wasn't there. But then Tosfot asks on himself, then why'd you say the same thing by the doctor? If the husband never knew about the mum, and she got it cured, then why doesn't that also work over here? Because the husband never knew about it, so he should be just as happy at this point. So you could answer the fact that it was still extant at the time of the Tanai, and therefore it doesn't work. Tosafot gives a secondary reason, which is that the mum is something that affects the husband even afterwards. The knowledge of the mum makes him uncomfortable even after the mum is cured. Even after the mum is resolved, the fact that he knows that she had this mum, that still makes him reticent. Then by nidarim, the only question is, does she have a neder or doesn't she have a neder? If you're able to be okay at the mafreya retroactively, then she doesn't have a neder. He doesn't care that she once had an eruv. His only concern is that she has nedarim and she's not mikayim them. The never never existed because you were a poteach the neder. Then, as far as he's concerned, this is not an issue at all for him, and he doesn't worry about it. By mum, which was a physical deformity or blemish over there, even if it's cured, it's still in his mind, or the picture in his mind of that deformity still makes it problematic for him, even if it's cured without his knowledge. And so, therefore, Tosafot differentiates between hatarat nedarim and rofei, even on a secondary level, as to what the husband's reaction will be once he finds out about the information. You're right. If he says, I don't want an isha nidranit, then you might have a problem. The reason that he doesn't want a neder is based on what we saw in the Mishnah, is that a woman has a neder is not mekayim them, the punishment's taken out on the kids. So he doesn't want a woman who has nidarim because of the risk to his children. If we can wipe out the nidarim, then that risk is now wiped out, and therefore, he doesn't worry about it. Alright, so Nagmer says, Vatanya, we have another bride that says, Eitzel chacham betira, itzel rofe ripe ota, ena mikudeshet. Don't we have a case where it says that she's not mikudesh in either of these cases? So there's a problem between chacham v'chacham. So Rava lo kasha. Chacham v'chacham is not a kasha. Some cases it works, some cases it doesn't work. Ha Rabbi Meir, ha Rabbi Elazar. Depends on who the Tana is. We have a difference in opinion, the Tanaim, between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar. Ha Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir who says, Adam rotze shetit bazei ishto bebeitin. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that a person is willing to have his wife be embarrassed to show up in Beitin and get the atarat nedarim. He'd rather that she's embarrassed and has this whole public affair with regards to the Hatarat Nedarim, then she has the Neder. So he's willing to have that happen in order to get the thing cleared. The person doesn't want his wife to be embarrassed in Beitin. Therefore, when he made the Tanai, I don't want Nedarim on her, including in that Tanai is that I also don't want her going into a public venue like Beitin to get the Hatarat Nedarim. That's also not acceptable to me. And therefore, even the Hatarat Nedarim won't help you here because then the woman's going to a public venue, which is also something that would bother him as well. Mahi, what is this machlok between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Meir? Tetzman, amotziyat ishto mishum neder, lo yachzir, mishum shemra, lo yachzir. Person divorces his wife because she has nidarim. He cannot, once he's divorced her, bring her back. Also of shemra, if there are rumors circulating that she had an extramarital affair or something went wrong, if he divorces her for that, lo yachzir. He cannot return her. The Gemara in Gittin discusses two reasons for that. We saw this in Yevamot as well. One possibility is the problem of later on. Because if later on she gets married, and then we find out that she can get a heter, a petach leneder, or we find out that the rumors were not true, the husband's gonna say, you know what? Had I known that, I would never have divorced her. Had I known that, I would have never have gotten a divorce, and that means now her second marriage is all mamzerim, it's an extramarital affair. Comes a huge issue in that case. So we tell the husband, listen, when you divorce her, it's over. Permanently over. You're not going to have the ability to bring her back, no matter what information you find out afterwards. Therefore, check into it carefully now, because you don't get a chance to say, I regret it later. Now, even though in many other places we say that when a person makes it clear why they're divorcing, over here he's making it clear that he's divorcing her because of the nether, or because of the rumor, so then we say in other places, as if the tnai is built in. It's as if that condition is part of it. We have it in the Gemara in Kiddushin, where a guy sells all of his property to make aliyah, and then he fails to make aliyah. So over there, the Gemara says that he can unwind all the sales, because it was clear that he was selling all his possessions at his house because he was going to make aliyah. The aliyah fails. It was as if that was an embedded condition in the sales. We say if it's obvious what the person's doing, then that's not as embedded. So why don't we say the same thing over here? That it's obvious why he's divorcing him because of these reasons. And therefore, the tnai is embedded in the gerushin because he's clearly doing it for this reason. So Tosfot says there's a difference and explains why there's a difference. But more importantly, we're going to tell him that there's a difference over here and say that you don't have a right. No matter what you think afterwards, there's no conditions left in your divorce. That's one reason. The other reason is that we don't want women taking the darim. So this is punitive to the woman. Know that if you start taking the darim, Bnot Yisrael, and you get divorced because of that, you're going to lose your husband permanently. He cannot bring you back. So it's actually a punishment to the woman, not a preventative measure for the future. Those are the two opinions as to why, once he divorces her for these reasons, then he can't take her back. Also by Shemra. We don't want the women to be prutzot. So we tell her, look, if you get divorced because you're a prutza, you're going to lose everything. So be careful. And so that's the reason behind it. Tosfot says he actually can't do it. Even when he says something afterwards, it doesn't affect it. And it's just a chashash that makes it look like it's mamzerut. Meaning that it's not real mamzerut, but it makes it look bad because he says, oh, I wouldn't have divorced her. And then people start talking and it becomes an ugly scenario, not because there's really, he can unwind the get. Not because he has the power to unwind the get. Others believe that he really can unwind the get because it was as if there was an embedded t'nai in the get when he makes the statement. If he makes it clear, the reason for the get is this. So now, that what I just explained, those two reasons will impact on the opinions in this Mishnah, which is, kol neder sheyadu bo rabim lo yachzir. Any neder that's known by the rabim, he cannot bring her back. Lo yadu ba rabim, yachzir. If the public doesn't know about it, then she can be brought back. So Rashi explains over here, kasavar taima mishum shloi prutzot bin nedarim. The reason over here is we don't want the women to be prutzot bin nedarim. Therefore, she takes a public neder that sheyadu bo rabim. There's nothing more prutza in nedarim than that. A public neder that's taken in front of 10 people. Therefore, if he divorces over there, he can't remarry her, because that is the penalty that we have for the woman for acting in this manner. And since this is like the ultimate prutza bin nedarim, therefore we say don't take her back. If it's a private neder, then Rabbi Yehuda says you could take her back because that wasn't so parutz bin nedarim. And then Rabbi Meir Omer, kol neder shetzarich hakirat chacham lo yachzir. Any neder that requires a hatara from the chacham, don't take her back. If it doesn't require hatarat nedarim, yachzir. So this comes to the other reason. Rabbi Meir is clearly saying, the problem is that we're afraid of kilkul later on. We're afraid of him saying later on, I really didn't want to get divorced. So therefore, Rabbi Meir says that it has to do with whether she goes to the chacham or not. If it's a neder that can be unwound by a hatara, you can't get remarried, because then there's a possibility of you unwinding the neder later on and causing this kilkul later on. On the other hand, if it's a neder that cannot be unwound by a chacham, then we don't worry about it, because there can't be any kilkul later on, because he can't regret it later on, and therefore you can return the woman, he can take her back. But it's clear, two things from Rabbi Meir. One is that his reasoning is premised on kilkul. Number two is that he allows the woman to go to the chacham. It's clear that Rabbi Meir doesn't worry about the woman going to the chacham, that the husband's not worried about that, because over here he says that if the woman goes to the chacham, that would be a kilkul. That would cause a problem, and the husband's not reticent to have his wife go to the chacham. On the other hand, we have Amar Rabbi Elazar, which is lo asu el tzarich, elo mibnei sheino tzarich. We only are osa the case of hatarat nidarim, because of the case where you don't need hatarat nidarim. As Rashi explains over here, eno tzarich hakirat chacham is a case where the baal can be made for the neder, where the baal can nullify the neder. So in the case of hafarat nidarim, if he knew about it and he didn't do hafarah, then that's fine, the divorce is permanent. But what happens if he knew about the neder, but he doesn't know that he has the power to be made for it? Since he doesn't know he has the power to be made for it, he goes ahead and gets divorced. And then he finds out afterwards that he could have been made for it. So he says, had I known I could have been made for the neder, I would have done that, and I would have never gotten divorced. And that'll cause a huge problem. So that's why by the case of Ein Tzarich Hakirat Chacham, where you can do the hafarah, there we don't allow them to get remarried because of the problem of kilkul. What about the case of Hakirat Chacham? You could say the same thing. No, Rabbi Elazar believes that you wouldn't let his wife go to the Chacham, because that'll make it to a public issue. And therefore, by Hakirat Chacham or Hatarat Nedarim, over there, Rabbi Elazar says you can't call it a regret, because the regret is not real. He wouldn't send his wife to the Chacham. He doesn't want her to be embarrassed in that way. And therefore, he would never say, oh, had I known we could get a Hatarat Nedarim, because he won't say that. He won't send her to the Chacham. But he says, you know why by Hatarat Nedarim we also say you can't take her back? That's because of the case of Hafara. We don't want you confusing with Hafara. But Hatarat Nedarim by itself, standalone, we would not have said that. So you see here, there's a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar as to whether a man cares about his wife going to a Chacham. Rabbi Meir says, go ahead, get that Hatarat Nedarim. Rabbi Elazar says, no, a husband does not want his wife out in a public venue getting a Hatarat Nedarim, making this into a public issue. So now the Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda that a neder shebirabim is a problem? Tichtiv lo yikum bnei Yisrael ki nishbe'u lahem nisiyei ha'ida. That bnei Yisrael did not kill out the givonim because they made a promise to them, or they made a covenant with them. The givonim tricked them into a covenant, and then they were really gnanim, and they really subject to being wiped out based on the Torah's requirement that you wipe out anybody who lives in the land. But since they've taken the shvuah, they stood by the shvuah. V'kama rabim. What does it mean they took a public shvuah? Nachman Yitzchak Amar shlosha. Means in front of three. Yamim shnayim, rabim shlosha. When you have the word yamim, yamim is plural, means two. Rabim, many, means three. And so therefore the minimum of rabim is three. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar asara. It means 10. Eida k'tibu. It says over here, nisiyei ha-eida. So since it says eida, we know eida is the word that's used for learning about a minion. And therefore, a neder berabim is something that is in front of a minion. So now, Rabbi Meir Omer, kol neder shetzarich hakirat chacham lo yachzir. Rabbi Elazar Omar, lo etzru tzarich, chalim pnei sheinu tzarich. V'amai kamiflagei. What are they arguing about? Rabbi Meir Savar, Adam rotze shitit bazei ishto bebeitin. As we stated before, Rabbi Meir is okay with the woman going to the chacham to get the atarai. He's willing to have her be embarrassed in public in order to get rid of the neder. And therefore, that's not something that would be considered untenable to him. And therefore, if afterwards he says, oh, had I known, I would have gotten a divorce, that will have impact. And Rabbi Elazar Savar, in Adam rotze shitit bazei ishto bebeitin. And Rabbi Elazar says, no, a person doesn't want his wife to be embarrassed in Beit Din, and therefore, even after the fact, if he knew that they could have done Hatarat Nidarim, he still would not have said, I regret it, because he wouldn't have wanted his wife to go to the Chacham anyway. The only regret he can have is a case of Hafara, where he finds out later on about the Hafara when he didn't know he could have done the Hafara. That's the only case that we worry about him regretting it. But in the case of Hatarat Nidarim, we do not worry about that, because he would never have sent his wife to the Chacham. The only reason we're Oser it is to give power, a low plug, from the case of Hafara. Okay, we're going to stop here. 9 lines down on the top of Ayin Hei, Amud Aleph.